Sometimes we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with Cristiano Ronaldo. The Portugal and Juventus football star recently reached another milestone, becoming only the second male player in history to score 100 international goals. Ronaldo tallied both goals in a 2-0 away win over Sweden. He now has 101 career international goals for Portugal and trails only the now retired Iranian striker Ali Daei, who tops the list with 109 career international goals. For reaction to Ronaldo's achievement, Iron Mike Mbonye called Johannesburg, South Africa, where he spoke with African football analyst Emeka Enyadike.
Cristiano Ronaldo has broken so many records, and sometimes a lot of people get carried away by the comparisons, or rather his rivalry with Lionel Messi. And so people tend to underestimate what he's achieved. But this one of scoring 100 goals in international football, that's no mean feat. That's a really, really remarkable achievement, because, I remember even growing up looking at the records of Pelé, the likes of Ferenc Puskas and Müller from Germany. There's been so many phenomenal goal scorers at international level. Even those who have won the top scorer at the World Cup, most of them haven't really scored that many goals. But Cristiano Ronaldo, massive achievement. So mind-blowing, breathtaking, if you say. So when you look at the chart for all-time goal scorers, there's quite a phenomenal list of names there. Puskas, Pelé, there's one African, Geoffrey Chitalo, there's the likes of Miroslav Klose, Lionel Messi is still far back on 70 goals, Didier Drogba, they're all back, Ibrahimovic, Zlatan, Robert Lewandowski, Edin Dzeko, Luis Suarez is on 59. There's so many really, really big players in that list, but Cristiano Ronaldo, 101 goals in 165 games. He only has Ali Daei to contend with. 9 goals, that's like 3 hat-tricks, and CR7 is probably going to end his career as the all-time greatest goal scorers. I never thought it was possible to break the record of Ali Daei at 109, but this says a lot about the man, Cristiano, and what he's achieved.
Do you think an African player can achieve this feat?
In terms of African goal scorers, Geoffrey Chitalo of Zambia, who had a magical career, not just at national level, but also at club level, with a lot of goals. I mean, he scored well over 100 goals, actually more than Messi. Messi's vaunted 2012 record of getting over 100 goals in the calendar year. Chitalo beat that. But Chitalo is in the all-time goal scorers record, which on the fifth position with 79 goals from 111 games. The closest African on that list is Hossam Hassan of Egypt, who has 67 goals in 176 caps. And by the way, Hossam's caps record is one of the highest in the world. And then, of course, you've got Didier Drogba, who had 65 goals in 105 internationals for the Ivory Coast. So I don't think an African can, if ever there was an African who could have broken that record, it probably would have been Geoffrey Chitalo, who unfortunately died in that plane crash with Zambia in 1993 as a coach by then. But I mean, of all the players who are playing now, there isn't even one of them that is close enough. I mean, Asamoah Gyan of Ghana at the point was doing very well. Samuel Eto'o has 56. If you scroll down the list, Gyan had 51, and maybe can still play a little bit, but it will be very difficult for any African to come near that. Maybe not in the future, but in terms of those who are still very active, there isn't too many of them in that space. People like Peter Ndlovu, who's retired at 30, with 38 goals. Rashidi Yekine, who's late for Nigeria, had 37. Isn't a lot of them. I mean, Abdel Hafid Tasfaut of Algeria with 36.
Do you also see some African players achieving same fame and status like Cristiano Ronaldo?
I think in terms of fame, we've had some really famous African players. In recent years, we've had the likes of Didier Drogba, Samuel Eto'o, Yaya Toure, JJ Okocha of Nigeria. But right now, Mohamed Salah is in the top five. In fact, him and Sadio Mane, I would put them in the top five in the world. Outside of Ronaldo, Messi, and Neymar, I think those two can stand up. And don't forget, two seasons ago, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang shared the top scorers ratings with Mane and Salah. And he's currently Arsenal's captain. And last season, he was also second on the scorers chart. So these players have done very well. Riyad Mahrez, from his time at Leicester onto his time at Man City, he's also been doing very well. So there are quite a number of African stars that are in the top rankings of football. But make no mistake about it, Ronaldo and Messi, and maybe to an extent Neymar, they're all on a different level. And then you can add the likes of Kylian Mbappe. But the African players are definitely pulling their weight. What keeps Ronaldo far ahead of everyone else is also his commercial value and just the kind of people he has around him and how they're able to turn him around. I mean, Ronaldo has the highest following of anyone in the world on Instagram. On Twitter, he's in the top five. And I'm seeing, you know, competing with those in the mainstream, pop stars, NBA players, NFL stars, movie actors, and just so much of those who are in popular culture. CR7 is a phenomenon, and I think that he inspires a lot of African players who want to be like him. Mo Salah also has tremendous followership on social media, and those are some of the benchmarks that you can use to rate them. But chances are, you know, as we get along, we might find more and more African players getting to that level. So this one, I can say yes, there are some that might be able to get to that level. Maybe not just yet.
That's African football analyst Emeka Enyadike, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Hi, my name is Emeka Enyadike from the City of Gold, Johannesburg. I want to say a big shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
Thank you, Emeka. Ghana's Olympic history dates back to 1952, when the country, then known by its colonial name of Gold Coast, sent 7 athletes to the Helsinki Games. 8 years later, at the Rome Olympics, Clement Quarte, an older brother of former welterweight world champion Ike Bazooka Quarte, made history as Ghana's first Olympic medalist. He won a silver medal in boxing in the men's light welterweight class in Rome. Since then, 2 more boxers, Eddie Blay and Prince Amarte, have won Olympic bronze medals for Ghana. And Ghana's under-23 football team won a bronze medal at the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. How has the COVID-19 pandemic changed the plans of the Ghana Olympic Committee for next year's Tokyo Games? That's the question Yao Ifusu-Larbi posed to the committee's president, Ben Nunu Mensah.
The COVID situation has kind of, you know, disturbed or unstable or, you know, shifted a few things I would have wished were doing. In terms of infrastructure development, I think that the minister will be the best person to, but from the little that I know, I think everything is on course. Papers have been presented to cabinet. We're looking at the possibility of putting up an Olympic style stadium in Bottiman, you know, and that can be done within a year. Once all the papers have been signed, which I have seen a couple of drawings for the stadium, and then I know that the paper has been presented to cabinet. The only thing that maybe we haven't done, and that is also because of COVID, is maybe preparation by our athletes themselves, and that's where the challenge is. And it's nobody's fault. It's because of COVID. I would have wished by now, most of our athletes are taking part in international competitions. We have a full complement of qualified athletes, and we're taking them out to go and train, to go and come and really prepare them for the Olympics. But it's unfortunate. You can't blame anybody but what has happened. But I think that notwithstanding, I know what other countries are doing, and we can also start. And fortunately for us, at least we've released participation in non-contact sports. So I can see some of our athletes training. At least I know the weightlifters are training on a daily basis. So I'm hoping that we can make up for the time loss immediately after December, when hopefully we'd have found a vaccine. We can start accelerating our preparation, and we can make up. Hopefully we can make up, but it's a learning process for us, and I'm sure that next year or before the next Olympic Games, we'll probably be doing things different and better than we've done for 2020.
What is the IOC's position to Ghana on opening up sports to ensure the safety of athletes?
I think that the president is on course. At least I'm also consulted on, you know, as and when or what we need to release. I'm also being guided, and I believe that the president and the corporate team are being guided by what is happening globally. IOC has asked that we open up sports based on protocols that we are able to observe. The president has a responsibility to keep Ghanaians and Ghana very safe, you know, and that also would weigh in how he decides to open up. And you see, what is important is that we should all take steps and make sure that we are observing the little protocol that is required of us, so that we don't keep spreading the disease. That is the only way we can clean it out completely and then get back to our normal life. But now, if we're having challenges, now if we're not having our normal life, I don't think that we should blame anybody. We rather need to work and make sure that each and every one of us makes it a reform. As you're protecting yourself, you're protecting others. If we do that, I'm sure with the kind of drop that we are having in this country, maybe by December, we'll not have COVID problems here, and then we can all freely go out there and lead our normal lives.
What has the postponement of the Olympic Games done to the plans of Ghana? Has it been a blessing in disguise?
I'll speak from the IOC standpoint, from the organizers, and then talk about what GOC is doing. Well, IOC's position is that we need to have the games at all costs. We need to do everything and have the games come on. And I think that the other time I had a chat with Seiko Hashimoto, and she is also of the opinion that, look, no matter what, these games has to come on. I think it's a very positive mentality to approach the games. What is going to push all of us to do is to work out things and make sure that it is, at least by July 2021, it will be safe to host the games. And that is, and when they say we have to do it at all costs, yes, it's kind of pushes everybody to make sure that we're ready for the game. And I like that approach. It's a good approach, and it's a good way to prepare ourselves mentally. The games, if it had come on in 2020, my brother would have said that it would have, Ghana wouldn't have shown the kind of things that we're capable of showing. So having it postponed for a year, it's a blessing in disguise for us, because then we have 12 months to correct the mistakes that we did, or to do things that we should have done before the games. And that is specifically, I'm referring to investing in the athletes. See, most of the times, these athletes who do the so-called least finance sports don't virtually get anything, any support from anywhere. It's either their federations or they themselves. And of course, those who are on the IOC or GOC scholarship, they earn a little bit of money. But that is not enough. Okay. They hustle and struggle to go for competitions. Okay. They, on their own, they've hustled to qualify for the Olympics. What are we doing for them as a nation? It is about time. We have 12 months. Let's invest in these athletes. What do we do to invest in them? Take them to as many competitions as possible. Send them to training camps. Send them to countries who have competitive advantages in the disciplines that they are taking. If it's our boxers, let's go and put them in Cuba. If it's our table tennis guys, let's go and put them in China. If it's our weightlifters, put them in Romania, put them in Russia, where weightlifting is good. That way, if we're able to get these athletes to go in on a training camp for, say, 6 months, okay, I am sure that with the kind of competition that they will have before the games, when they go out there, yes, they would go really, really prepared and they would give out their best. Countries spend close to 4 years to prepare for the Olympics. We can't spend 12 months or we can't spend 4 months to prepare and expect that if we are serving a very fair God. I spend 4 years, you spend 4 months. And then God, being so fair, will say, you spend 4 months, you win the medals and go. I don't think that's the way it works.
How has funding been? Is the committee financially sound to help our athletes excel?
Yes, I think it started coming in about three, four days ago. So at least I had a few athletes who have called me to say, President, thank you very much. We've just gotten our allowance from the YA and I'm very happy. At least it's a good beginning and it looks like it's if it goes well, it would be good for Ghana sports. That's something that we've all been pushing for. You know, back in the days, when Ghana sports did so well, we did so well because we had athletes who were working in government institutions, state institutions, with the security services, who did not have to worry about where their next meal is going to come from because they've been employed by the state just to train and go and compete for Ghana. So I think gradually with this YA thing, we're getting to that era where at least our national team at least have a way of earning some income from the state.
How many athletes have qualified and in what disciplines for the Olympic Games next year?
We have qualification from track and field. We have qualification from the para sports. We have just about 5 athletes who have qualified. But that is just about 53% of all the opportunities available to us. In fact, the Olympic Games has just 53% of the slots that have been filled. So what it means is that there's still about 47% slots that have still not been filled. And Ghana has an opportunity of qualifying more athletes, especially from judo, from swimming, from weightlifting. You know, just like we did in Rio. I am very, very confident. I can speak for weightlifting that at least we can get at least one weightlifter. He's almost qualified to join the team. Abeku for swimming is also doing very well. He can just slip through. And then we have some of our judo cats who are based outside and they are doing extremely well. I'm just hoping that we can pull this through. And then from next year, or working towards the next Olympic Games, which is in Paris in 2024, we start approaching and doing things differently.
That's Ben Nunu Mensah, the president of the Ghana Olympic Committee. And he spoke with Yao Ofusu-Larbi in Accra. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African athletics, Olympic champion and world record holder Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya is looking forward to defending his title at the London Marathon on October 4th. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, the energetic Andy Edwards reports how this will be a very unique London Marathon.
This is going to be a London Marathon like no other, for the simple reason that instead of more than 40,000 runners following a path from Greenwich in South London to the Mall beside Buckingham Palace in the heart of the capital, the event will be split in two, comprising an elite race only in one of London's parks, St James's, while the mass runners take part in a virtual race from their homes because of coronavirus regulations. What does this mean for the elite race? Now that we know that Eliud Kipchoge and Kenenisa Bekele in the men's event, the two fastest marathon runners in history, and not forgetting Bridget Koskay, who has taken women's marathon running onto a different planet with her world record of 2 hours 14 minutes and 4 seconds, will all be on the start line. No marathon has a bigger budget to attract the stars than London, and the essence of the competition, including elite wheelchair racers, will remain the same, as the race director Hugh Brasher said when the venue was announced recently.
The gods of the sport will still be taking part in an elite race, in a government official elite sport under the COVID-19 regulations around St James's Park. Eliud Kipchoge, Kenenisa Bekele, Bridget Koskay, Manuela Shah, David Weir.
I believe that the setting of the race has the potential to produce tactics and psychological approach that we never come close to seeing in a marathon held in normal circumstances. Well, here's an insider's view, albeit from a runner of modest ability and achievement, that is myself. The race venue is compact, to say the least. St. James's Park has a perimeter of just over a mile, or 1.7 kilometres. Think of it as the equivalent of a 1,500-metre track race being confined to one long lap. I used to run there, usually hither and thither on the cross-country section on the infield when I worked nearby in the 1980s. The asphalt path which will be used for the race has no hills to speak of, just the occasional undulation. It's also quite narrow. Six runners abreast would fill the path. This is what it will mean for the elite. Top-class men are running each marathon mile in 5 minutes 30 or sometimes better. With laps barely longer than a mile, a leader can still be in sight of their pursuers, and this will apply to the women's race as well. Unlike a long road, that could give the runners chasing the leader a psychological boost, being able to gauge their energy distribution. On the other hand, some elite runners, say men running around 2 hours 10 tempo or slightly faster, are going to be lapped if the leader or leading group are on course for a finishing time in the range of 2:02 or 2:04. Presuming that London will organise pacing groups as usual, including one for super fast times in the region of Eliud Kipchoge's world record of 2:01:39, those pacemakers, plus out-and-out racers, will represent a lot of traffic on what will be the narrow perimeter path of St James's. Just imagine, 35 laps or more of the elite field whizzing around, barely time for watching TV audience to catch their breath before they come round again. It would be more like a cycle race in a velodrome, but without the banking, and barely a dull moment. If they are near their best, I would expect Eliud Kipchoge, the world record holder, and Kenenisa Bekele, who was only 2 seconds outside that time in Berlin last September, to be contesting the men's race, but on a much tighter stage than usual. The same applies to the women's race, where Bridget Koskay, providing she's even reasonably close to her world record form, is the favourite. But that is not the whole story of a big city marathon. It's the equivalent of a fair-sized city on the move. These races have anything from 30,000 runners lining up in normal times. The London Marathon, as far as the mass field is concerned, is following the trend and going virtual, as the race director Hugh Brasher explained.
What we're asking is the 45,000 people that would have been making that incredible journey at 26.2 miles from Greenwich to Westminster with those other athletes, now that they make that journey in a different way, in their way, from their homes, on the 4th of October.
There are, of course, many more serious aspects to the coronavirus than sports events being cancelled. But sport is also a business, providing employment for some and entertainment for many. That applies just as much to marathons, which, once they achieve a certain size, have to be run as a business. A race director is looking at how an elite field is recruited, which means prize money, perhaps appearance fees, TV coverage and other media coverage, and other forms of publicity, all which are intended to attract sponsors. Then the mass field is important in creating public interest and participation, plus the income from those entrance fees. Big city races usually have three sources of income: entrance fees, sponsorship, and perhaps public subsidy, the latter from a regional government or city council, which recognises how much of an economic boost an influx of thousands of runners, many from abroad, bring to their town in race week. Marathon races are not achieving anything like that level of income this year. Unless a vaccine for the coronavirus is found to be workable, regulations which prevent mass gatherings set by local or national government may still be in place next year, and a big marathon is certainly a mass gathering. Now, that is a gloomy, but I believe realistic note, and here's another prospect to consider. I reckon the chances of the Tokyo Olympics taking place next year are 50-50 at best, and if they don't happen in 2021, I don't think they'll happen at all. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks, Andy. And that wraps up the September 15th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.